How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The Millennium Park Summer Music Series started last week. Mondays and Thursdays until August 8th, you can catch concerts from emerging talent or established artists all for free at the J. Pritzker Pavilion. Corinne Bailey-Ray, NPR's Tiny Desk winner, the Philharmonic, and many, many more. But today, instead of talking about the artist, let's talk about the space. This summer, as part of Reset's What's That Building series, we're highlighting Chicago music venues. On a sunny day last week, I met up with our architecture sleuth, Dennis Rodkin, to explore the Pritzker Pavilion. Here's Dennis as we got a view behind the facade.
So we're sort of at the back end, or really kind of backstage at the J. Pritzker Pavilion. And the reason to come here first is that when you're out on the lawn, you see this great explosion of steel. Nobody's really sure what it looks like. It could be the flames of the Great Chicago Fire. It can be the sails of boats out on the lake. What the architect described it as is a flower, but it looks like a permanent structure when you're out there. From here, you can tell that it's not a permanent structure. It's really just a facade supported by all of these beams that we're standing under. Mm-hmm. And the point of that is it was classified as sculpture as opposed to a building so that it could get built here in Chicago's Lakefront Park. And classifying it as a sculpture gets around that rule that we've had since 1836 that the lakefront needs to be open, clear, and free.
Okay, now that makes sense. Tell me how the J. Pritzker Pavilion came to be in the first place.
Okay, well, first you have to go back to the 19th century when Chicago's lakefront was essentially deeded to the railroads. A railroad had what turned out to be an easement, didn't actually own it, but was able to lay track all the way across the front door of Chicago, essentially. And into the 1990s, if you were on Michigan Avenue, about a block from where we are now, when you looked east, you saw a narrow sliver of land, and then it dropped down to a railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And many people wanted to, and Mayor Richard Daley was very serious about covering that over and making a park. So for the millennium, for the coming of the millennium, the idea is you build a deck over the railroad land. There was some legal wrangling that had to happen to get the railroads out. The railroads essentially sort of, it's not quite true to say they had squatters' rights, but it appeared to people that they owned the land, while in fact they really only had rights to it. So if you read Chicago Magazine's recent article on the development of Millennium Park, or you also did a segment
That's
on the
right.
recent book about the origins of the park, you know, the idea was we really want to have a splendid park stretched across the front of the city. And so Mayor Daley goes to Adrian Smith and Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, mm-hmm. very prominent architect and architecture firm. And the original design is, you know, Grant Park and a lot of other major parks in Chicago were this Beaux-Arts design, big geometrical shapes that intersect, very large curves, that sort of thing. So let's make Millennium Park, this new chunk of park, Beaux-Arts as well. So the original design, we're going to deck over the railroad land, build a parking garage underneath, and then build this sort of French-style park, big oval lawn, and there's going to be a performance stage. And when you look at the old renderings, there's this big oval lawn, which we did eventually get, and then there's a berm at the north end, elevated ground at the north end, with the music stage kind of sticking out from that berm, sort of projecting out from it.
Why is that?
Well, because they were trying to be so careful about the idea that our lakefront has to remain open, clear, and free. Let's not build a building here. Let's build a berm and have a little music stage kind of poke out from it.
Gotcha.
So then the next chapter is Adrian Smith started to realize, you know, we should be more modern. Let's not go back to the Beaux-Arts. Other leaders of the development of the park say the same thing, and eventually they bring in Frank Gehry, who at the time is really the it architect around the world. Ah. He's done the Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles, the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain. These sort of explosions of stainless steel.
That's his thing.
Yeah, that's his thing, and we should have one. We're Chicago. And so the idea is bring him in and try to sort of turn it into something much more modern. And what Gehry said when he rolled out the model here is, it's the 21st century. Let's live in this century, not by implication the 19th or early 20th.
So this eventually opens in 2004.
In July 2004, so 20 years ago right now.
That makes sense. And that's perfect timing for this conversation. We're at 20 years. Dennis, you want to know something pretty cool?
Oh, yeah.
These guys actually gave me access to the stage.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that door that we're looking at to our left, we can go inside.
Let's do it.
Want to do it? All right.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dennis, now we're sitting inside of the coral balcony, which is providing one incredible view right now, because I think, like me, you've at least sat out there in those red chairs. But have you been in here?
I have not. And one of the big differences, I think, sitting here is up here on stage, you're looking south across the park. We see high rises down around Roosevelt Road,
right,
which were built around the time this park was. When the park was built, the idea was that the audience would sit facing the skyline. Mm. There was no skyline south of the park. Now, I don't think that anybody would turn you around because the best of the buildings are north of us. But it is interesting to think that the performers sit here and they too have a skyline view.
That is incredible to think of. I mean, just sitting here, first of all, makes me feel like I wish I was a performer to sort of get this view each and every time on stage. It's got to be a luxury to play here in this space, don't you think?
I think it must be, in part because of the acoustical nature of the building. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was designed very specifically, and we've got all this wood wrapped around us, and you can see it looks perforated. Every panel of wood looks like it has hundreds of perforations. Behind that is more soundproofing. And a big difference when you're sitting here is that what you're surrounded in is this wood, while when you're sitting outside, you're surrounded either by the outdoors or by the metal elements of the auditorium.
Who designed the space?
Frank Gehry.
Frank Gehry. And he designed it, according to what you've written in your story, to sound like the inside of a building?
You know, I think when you're sitting on that lawn, the feeling should be that you're inside a glass concert pavilion, because anybody who has sat on that lawn, in particular at night, knows you see the lights change, you see the clouds. It's nice to have the darkness of the night sky and the skyline, but you're hearing the music as if you're in an indoor room. The way the sound system was arranged on all of those crossbars of the trellis and the upright columns, it was designed specifically to make it feel that you were getting the same sound quality as if the performances were inside. And that was a Gehry idea. Frank Gehry came up with it. He used a system called Laris, L-A-R-E-S, at the time, the most advanced sound system there was. Then later in 2019, completely rehabbed to be advance to that day. And it really is true. If you're sitting 685 feet from where we're sitting now at the farthest edge of the lawn, you should hear the sound just as well as the people right here in this front row of red seats in front of us.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. What else can you tell me about this space that we're sitting in? I believe we're sitting in the rows of the seats that make up the choral terrace, right? That's behind the orchestra?
This is, it's 85 feet wide, 38 feet deep. So we here in the next to the last row, we're nearly 38 feet from that glass wall that separates us from the now empty audience seats. It was designed to feel like an indoor concert hall. You would see a space this large in Symphony Center or another place like that. The idea would be anything you can do for an indoor concert, you can do for an outdoor concert here.
Now, Dennis, this space is really beautiful. That leads me to believe that it costs a pretty penny.
It did, $60 million. That starts with a $15 million gift from Cindy Pritzker, the widow of Jay Pritzker, for whom this is named. And what she said is, I will put in $15 million if I can bring in Frank Gehry. She knew him. Cindy and Jay Pritzker launched and continued to fund the Pritzker Prize, which is really the top prize in architecture.
Yes.
Frank Gehry had won that prize in the late 1980s. So about 10 years later, when Cindy really wants to make this a spectacular spot, she brings him in.
Well, I suppose at some point we have to move on from this space, but I don't want to leave.
Well, you know what? You wouldn't have to leave if it were winter. One of the things about this glass wall that separates us from the audience is that it's insulated. It's sealed, obviously.
Yes.
So that they can use, while you're not going to want to sit out on that lawn in the winter, they can use the interior here for rehearsal space.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, so it's not just while out there is really just a summer venue, in here is a year-round space.
So I mentioned, Dennis, that I've sat in those red seats out there. I haven't actually touched the lawn. So shall we?
Let's go sit out there.
All right, so now we're on the lawn, Dennis, and this is much more familiar to me, this view. I've never quite been this far back, but I like it.
Well, and so one of the reasons it would feel nice sitting so far back is this sound system that is built all around us. And what's fascinating about it, I think almost everybody at this point knows that the trellis was built as a sound system. It's not just there for looks. But one of the really interesting parts of that is we talked about how Adrian Smith is the architect who's sort of leading development, and then Frank Gehry is brought in.
Yeah.
And in that Chicago Magazine history where they spoke to Adrian Smith, he talks about how he really thought they were bringing in Gehry to do that proscenium, the thing we've been trying to describe.
Yes.
That explosion of metal there. He didn't think that the rest of this trellis, was part of the job. And Gehry says, no, I'm doing the whole thing. I'm doing not only that stage, but this whole sound system. And he brings in these engineers to build this very specific kind of sound system, which makes the whole experience work.
So once again, it's sleek and it's modern, but it has a whole other purpose to it.
Yeah, it has a function, and it functions very well. As I mentioned, it was renovated or upgraded again in 2019, so that you really shouldn't feel that the sound is suffering, that you'd get a better concert if you were inside.
That's right. Oh, so that's pretty cool. What else can you share about how the sound is really reverberating throughout the spaces? I'm looking up and I am seeing speakers sort of all the way along toward the back.
It's very technologically advanced. It's not like sitting at an old drive-in movie and everybody's got their own speaker on a stick. There are microprocessors and other things involved to delay the sound as it moves back, create the kind of reverberation you would hear if you were in a concert hall. It's pretty remarkable that this was thought of, because everybody's got an outdoor stage and you just sort of think, well, I'm not really going to hear it very well.
Yeah.
But what Gehry wanted and what we got is something where you get this great sound quality outdoors.
They really did think of everything, didn't they?
They did.
And really, this has only been here since 2004. I mean, 20 years, as we said earlier. I mean, that's a long time, but I can't imagine there was nothing here before this.
Well, of course, right here, there was railroad, but there has always been, or since 1915, there's been a music venue in the park, primarily in Grant Park, because, of course, Millennium Park didn't exist. From 1915, there was a wood band shell down by Ida B. Wells Drive. And then later in the 1930s, there's a rainbow-shaped band shell, the kind you see at the Hollywood Bowl and other places, built not too far from us here, about two blocks away, to have free concerts during the Depression. And this was organized in part by James Petrillo, who was the head of the Musicians Union. And so much later, when that one, the wood one, which was supposed to be temporary, because again, remember the open, clear, and free problem, it's built in the 30s, it lasts until the 70s, and then when a replacement is built, that is named for Petrillo. That too is supposed to be temporary, and it was actually built to be what they call demounted or deassembled, so it could be moved around to other places, closed down for the winter, but it was never taken down. Including in the 20 years since this replacement was built, it's still just about a block from us.
Oh, interesting. So while I have you here, Dennis, I've got to settle something that it's bugging me. What is this supposed to be? Like, I'm seeing a giant, like when I look at the trellis, I'm seeing a giant wig. It looks like, you know, the stage is sort of the head of someone and all that metal above it is just a big curly wig, like, you know, the ones that judges used to wear back in the day.
Here comes the judge.
What do you see?
Well, I think I might be an extreme minority opinion, but I combine it with the bridge next to us, the BP bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Which Geary also designed and has the same metal cladding. And that sort of snakes across the road. And if you follow the line, you see this as the head. I see this as a giant snake in downtown Chicago. I don't think anybody else does.
A snake, but Dennis?
That's what I see.
I mean, my wig might be a little off, but still a snake?
Well, but what Geary said is that it's a little flower.
It's a flower. Okay. I thought they were just curls, but I'll go with the flower.
It was meant for there to be projections on the panels. And you do see the colors change, and especially one of the things I love is in the winter when these panels are all lighted and then the lawn is covered with snow, you get a really spectacular look. We haven't had a lawn covered with snow in a couple of winters in a row, but yes. Years ago, you'd stand back there at the back end of the lawn, look all across this snow to this headdress or the head of the snake.
Right.
And it was a really great composition.
I mean, however you slice it, this is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, look at the skyline behind it. It's beautiful.
You know, some people were worried that it would be an eyesore because what Geary was designing was pretty far forward. And what he said was, I can't really ruin Chicago's skyline with one little dumb building. That's how he described it, one little dumb building. And I think when you see it today and you look at this skyline rising above it, it fits right in.
I think he knew what he was talking about.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ethan Schwab and edited by Meha Ahmed. It was mixed by Ethan and Micah Yasin. For more of our What's That Building series and a full archive of our conversations, head over to wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.